This is Fresh Air. I'm Marty Moscowain. For more than 10 years, my guest, Dr. Alvin Poussin, was the psychiatrist for the Huxtables, the fictional family on The Cosby Show. Poussin is a professor of psychiatry at the Harvard Medical School, and he was the script consultant for Cosby's show. Poussin also writes about black family issues for Ebony magazine. The gurus of child-rearing, Drs. Spock and T. Barry Brazelton, have little expertise in race-related issues. So in 1975, Dr. Poussin joined with Dr. James Comer of the Yale Child Studies Center to write the book Raising Black Children. An updated edition has just been published. Dr. Poussin himself is the father of a 13-year-old son. Though Poussin believes that the basics of child-rearing are universal, there are some needs specific to black children.
I think the unique needs of black children come from a number of sources. First, the parents have to have a positive attitude. What I mean by that, let's say that there are black parents who themselves lack in self-esteem because they're black or feel negative about themselves because of that, that well, they have to work on themselves because if they don't, when their child is born, they may transmit some of this negative feeling about being black to their children in a variety of kinds of ways, including how they receive them into the world, what they feel their life chances may be, how they react to their skin color. So that first there's a job for parents. After that, I think it's very important as the children are growing up and developing, for instance, when you start to talk to them and read to them and tell them stories, that you not just use the traditional materials like Goldilocks and Little Red Riding Hood and Jack and Jill and Cinderella and Sleeping Beauty and on, because in all of those tales, fairy tales and Mother Goose rhymes, all of the characters are white. And after a while, the child is going to wonder, where do they fit in? Where do they belong?
Would you say that the traditional psychiatry, traditional psychology has been culturally biased, has been unaware of the unique and special needs of black children?
Well, I think that often, despite the prejudice and discrimination in the country and the unique problems of a lot of minorities, frequently psychiatry and the other fields of trying to be colorblind, which you can't be. And frequently when they say colorblind, they don't really mean colorblind. They mean using the traditional kinds of approaches with everyone. And those traditional approaches are primarily kind of America-European and white.
And so what is missing, you think?
Well, first of all, I think what's missing is, I think, people in the mental health field, people working with children, school teachers, need much more educational background and cross-cultural issues and cultural differences between people so that they can more effectively work with them and understand their special issues and problems. In addition, I think that workers in these fields have to have some grasp and understanding of racism and its effect on families and children.
Well, how did you raise your children to cope with the discrimination that they might face?
Well, I think in a variety of ways. I think I think one in the kinds of materials I read to my child, I made sure that he had a multicultural library, and sometimes I made up stories myself to tell my my son in particular about how I had grown up, my neighborhood I grew up in. I've worked, spent a lot of time working in the civil rights movement since the 60s, and I've talked to him, and even when he was little, went to his school and gave talks on Martin Luther King Day about what it was like in the South back in the 60s and what was done to black people and the struggles that went on. So he was exposed very early to those kinds of historical realities. And he's still able to ask questions and to wonder and even ask questions about the past. So I think a lot of black parents, in fact, have to do that with the children, is to tell them something about the past, not to make them feel badly about it, but to give them strength. For instance, there are some black parents who feel embarrassed to talk to their children about the fact that we were once slaves. because they feel it's stigmatizing and they feel uncomfortable talking about it. Well, I think that you have to talk about those things, but you have to talk about it from a position of strength. That yes, this was a wrong, but through our strength and perseverance, etc., we've survived. We're doing much better. There's still a struggle going on, and all of you, your new generation, has to take part in continuing those efforts so that that discrimination and as much of racism as possible is eliminated.
Were you careful about transmitting the rage you might have felt about racism?
Yes, I'm careful about that because I don't think it's productive to have children act out your rage or feel it constantly. I think, and I'm not feeling it constantly, so that's no problem. But I let him know that it's appropriate to feel angry when people mistreat you. But I wouldn't want him to go on some kind of destructive rage bent, which some children do, teenagers do, striking out and feeling hopeless. I try to give him a balanced sense of you. There's a lot you can do, but you may face some problems, but you can deal with them effectively, but you have to recognize them and be ready to.
What happens when race is not a topic of conversation in Black families? And in your book, you say that most African-American parents don't really talk to their children about race.
Well, I think some do and some don't. Actually, they pick it up because if the Black parents who say they're not talking to the children about race are frequently talking to each other about race rather frequently because of what's happening in the world. If they're not talking about South Africa, they're talking about the Rodney King beating. They're talking about other incidents all around the country. They're talking about the campus racial incidents. So they're talking about it all the time, and children are in the home, and children pick up on it. Now, the sad thing is if they pick up on the adult conversations and they have questions, those parents who avoid trying to help them to understand what they're talking about, I think Black parents should assume that children know what's going on in a home and what's being discussed. They pick up on it, and that they should be included at the level of their understanding without frightening them to understand some of these things.
There's a section in the book where a parent has a concern. They have a 4-year-old Black child who calls himself white. When do young children begin to feel their race or begin to be very conscious of what race they are?
Well, they begin to pick up on these things. It's going to vary a little bit. Let's say in an average age around 4 or 5, they begin to pick up and recognize differences, more and more boys and girls, and that hair is a different color and skin color, etc. And they will react to it in various ways. A black child says at age 4, I want to be white, may really not be saying what he thinks he's saying, that it may not really mean that he's rejecting being Black. What it may mean, for instance, if he's in an environment where all the other kids are white, is kind of saying, well, why aren't I should be like, my friends or the other kids that I play with? That their concept of race isn't that well developed, and that's why parents, have to step in there and begin to educate them about the world, that people come in different colors, and some brown people, and Asian people, and so on, and that the color of the skin, doesn't matter that much, that everybody, the parents have to step in and give them some direction. Now, if that same child was being made fun of or in some way attacked because their skin was brown and then came home and said, hey, Mom and Dad, I want to be white, that would be a different order of business, see. Then you would have to intervene in another way. Really reassure that child that he's fine. If necessary, talk to the parents or the school if that type of thing is going on, and make sure the problem's corrected.
What responsibility do you think interracial couples have for their children in terms of talking about race, or we'll say white couples who adopt black babies? And does that complicate the race issue?
Well, I think it complicates the race issue somewhat, but it's not insurmountable. The reason why I say complicated, it really depends on the parents. Now, I've seen interracial couples, for instance, where for some one reason or the other, they want to totally deny the importance of race, or race is a factor. And, you know, their child is biracial, and that's fine, but they're going to raise the child to be colorblind. Well, that's nice and idealistic, but it's not reality, because that child, whether they like it or not, may come back from school and meet up with all of the kinds of incidents that the so-called regular black child would have to face, because the society would be reacting to this child, even if it was he was more light-skinned and so on, as a black child. So they're likely to be called racial slurs, too, if that comes up. They're likely to have concerns about, well, I want to be all white or whatever. I want to be black. They bring up similar issues. So I think that interracial couples have to be prepared to deal with the realities of race issues in the United States.
My guest is Dr. Alvin Poussant, and he's a child psychiatrist, professor of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School, and the co-author of a book which was written back in 1975 and has been...
Yeah, co-author, by the way, with Dr. James P. Comer, who's a child psychiatrist at the Yale Child Center in New Haven.
That's right, and the book is called Raising Black Children. We'll be back after a short break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Dr. Alvin Poussant, and we're talking about a book that he co-authored with Dr. James Comer called Raising Black Children. Do black children and black adults feel that everything they do reflects on their race? Is that a given?
You can get in that mentality. That's often been a burden, and sometimes can become an overwhelming burden. That is where the black person is constantly feeling, hey, everything I do, I'm not just doing it myself as an individual. It means that whatever I do, people will use to judge the entire race of black people. Well, that's a burden, and in fact, when white people do that, that's racism too, that they put such a burden on an individual black person, and a kind of saying, if you mess up, we're going to take it to mean that all black people are incompetent. So you better make sure you do a good job. Well, that's no one else has that burden. I mean, a white person can mess up and fail, and no one starts thinking, well, that means all white people are inferior. But unfortunately, in the way racism operates, that sometimes a black person can fail in a job, and they generalize from it, white people, and say, well, black people just don't have ability in this, or black people just can't do this or that. And you even still today hear weird remarks like, well, we tried a black in that position once and it didn't work out, so we won't hire another one because that one black. Well, that is really primitive thinking, if I can use that word, and very bigoted thinking.
Well, I would think that puts a parent in really a no-win situation.
The parent in a no-win situation?
Yeah, because you're dealing with the reality, which is that the white world is making judgments about an individual black person and what it says about their race, and yet you're saying, which of course is understandable, that the pressure on a parent or on a child to be an ambassador for their race is an impossible one.
Yeah, I think it's an impossible one, and I don't think that that most people should take that on. Except to some extent. You see, it depends. I think that we want black children to be proud and feel good about being black, African American. At the same time, we feel that enormous pressure that may come where a child feels that everything they do means they're representing the race can be so intimidated that it actually interferes with their success. For instance, I'll give you a specific example.
Go ahead.
I come across black children and even on college campuses, black students who are afraid to talk in class because they feel so much pressure that if somehow they don't, if they don't look bright, if they give the wrong answer, that it's going to reflect negatively on black people in general. So it inhibits them from participation and doing the kinds of things that students do, that is, making mistakes, sometimes giving the wrong answer, which is all part of being a student and developing. That black students have to be free, to some extent, to make mistakes and to fail without feeling that somehow they're destroying or hurting the entire community. The burden of that problem should be with white people, that white people have to stop doing that. And they have to understand that black people are not representing their race, that they are individuals. They come from a particular, ethnic group. I remember back in the old days growing up, every time Joe Louis and other black athletes won some championship, the announcers would be on the radio and say, "Hey, you know, Joe Louis, you're a real credit to your race." Huh. Now, that's like weird. I mean, in fact, I don't know of another group where they use that term. I've never heard them say to a white person, "Hey, you know, you're a credit to your race because you flew to the moon or something." Maybe they're thinking that. Who knows? But I don't hear them say that even to a lot of other ethnic groups. So the implication in "you're a credit to your race" is that, you know, the race ain't so hot, you know. So you your accomplishment means that you're special, and maybe will help change the attitudes we all have that black people are inferior. See, those are the kinds of subtleties that we have to alert our children to.
Are the kinds of subtleties that you're describing, does that really then describe the difficulty of raising a black child in the 90s, which is that racism can look much more disguised?
Yes, it can be more disguised. It's not as overt, but it may be there, and sometimes it's very difficult to tell. Let me tell you, for instance, sometimes racism may appear because a particular white person doesn't make eye contact with black people but makes eye contact with white people. On the other hand, let's say there's a white person that has to interview a black person. And that white person, in fact, in general, doesn't make eye contact with anyone. The black person in that situation may feel very awkward and wondering, well, is this person not making eye contact with me and kind of avoiding my gaze and so on because they're uncomfortable because I'm black? Or is this white person someone who is like this all the time? Well, frequently, there's no way to find out. So that black person may leave that interview very troubled, feeling, well, that person really didn't want to relate to me, really didn't want to talk to me, really didn't want me in the office, was very uncomfortable with me. And they begin to feel, well, maybe it probably was because I was black, but they're not sure. So those kinds of incidents occur constantly, leaving a lot of black people in positions of feeling very ambivalent and stressed frequently. You go into the market or grocery store or department store and you meet a clerk that's very nasty to you. And you stop and wonder, well, is the clerk being nasty to me because I'm black, or is this just a nasty clerk? But you may leave that store still with the question. And that's stressful and sometimes very difficult to resolve, because it could be either. But it's hard for the black person with just one incident, unless they're going to stand around all day and watch the store clerk to see how she behaves to other people, to know if they're being mistreated because of their skin color.
You were a consultant to The Cosby Show. How do you think that show changed understanding of black families?
Well, I think, it's hard to measure. I mean, I want to hope or say that the show had a very positive impact on white Americans and black Americans as well. It was a widely watched show for 8 years, one of the most successful TV shows in television history, and it depicted a black family that was upper middle class, but a family that most families across class lines and across ethnic lines could identify with, dealing with the day-to-day kinds of problems families have with children. But it was a professional family, so that there were, it was hard to stereotype black people when you looked at the Cosby show, because the children were all very different, of different types. The parents were a professional couple, and I think that was important because before then you didn't see blacks playing those kinds of roles, doctors and lawyers. So that hopefully it gave children kind of a sense of what they could be and where they could go. The show constantly emphasized education, and I think it taught white people and other people that the issues in the black community and black family are very similar to the issues that they deal with, that we have much more in common in terms of the day-to-day struggles that we have with other groups than we have differences. And that's why I think the Cosby Show was able to be adapted and put on television in over 30 countries all around the world, dubbed in various languages.
What actually did you do there, and how did you work with the scriptwriters and the stars?
Well, what I did, Cosby hired me for the show, and he wanted me to critique the scripts. He wanted me to read through the scripts and to help him to do certain things, to be an alter ego for him. One, he wanted very much for the show not to use put down or insult humor or derogatory humor, so I was on the alert for that. He also wanted the show to be psychologically believable in its interactions with the children and the family and the dynamics, so that it would seem as real as possible, given the limitations of the sitcom, so that it would seem like real life, even though it was humorous, so that people could identify with the show, that the show shouldn't be a bunch of one-liners with no plot. Then he wanted me to help suggest different ways in which the show could be educational, and then also when any opportunity that I had to help put the show in a black cultural context.
Dr. Alvin Poussin is a child psychiatrist and co-author of Raising Black Children. This is Fresh Air.